Welcome to Hearthstone Deck Tech Season 2, Episode 5, Control Warlock with Coach Nick. How for day, everyone. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 5 of Hearthstone Deck Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Ken, and today I have a very special guest. I know for a lot of people who listen to the podcast, reaching legend is one of the bigger questions and kind of obstacles that face a lot of players. And for me, I couldn't do it on my own. I really, like, the first time I ever hit legend, I didn't know if I could hit it, you know, and I really needed an outside perspective to explain to me when I was doing things incorrectly or what lines of play I was missing. And today's guest is really special to me because he is the first coach to help me get to legend. And it's none other than my friend from Turkey, the ever wonderful, ever good looking Nick, Coach Nick. So Nick, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure. I don't know if I deserve all the compliments, but thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. Nick, you are what are you, like 22 years old? 21 years old. So when did Patron Warrior, when was Patron Warrior out? That was maybe 2 years ago, right? You think?
Two or three. I think it was 3 years ago.
So 2 or 3 years ago, I was 34 or 33 years old. And then there was this 19, 18 year old kid who was teaching me how to be better at Hearthstone. And that was you. And I know we did, like, it was so funny because, you know, you live in Turkey. And, you know, we spent tons of time together playing Hearthstone and just going through lines of play, coaching me. And, you know, with in my opinion, was just like one of the best decks ever created in Patron Warrior. And we had a great run.
Definitely.
We had a great run. Like, and it was so enjoyable as an experience. It was amazing. And, you know, I'm an older guy. I'm old, man. I'm twice your age. And you know, I definitely learned so much, and definitely from that experience I became a much, much better player. And I could see how quick my growth in the game changed after that experience, you know. And, you know, because of the experience with you, Nick, you know, I was very willing to get coaching from, like, other players in the future, like Sippy Wee and Meaty. You know, I pay top dollar for those, but, you know, like, it was definitely worth it. But enough about that. Let's talk a little bit about you, Nick. Why don't you tell the viewers at home about your Hearthstone experience, how you got into the game, and maybe other card game experience you have that helped you, you know, improve in Hearthstone.
So I started the game around, like, when the Pyroblast nerf happened. I saw it from a YouTuber, if I recall correctly, and I just downloaded the game. Felt super fun at first, since I really enjoyed Yu-Gi-Oh! As a kid, watching the cartoon. And having the ability to play a game like that really caught me. So that's when I first started the game. Got a bit more serious in the following years, since I was just learning the game. I didn't know you could actually, like, be a pro or whatever, or have to play the game really well. It was definitely never like that. Then at some point I felt like the game was actually fun, and I could, if I invested a little bit more time into it, I could be one of the decent enough players to play it. So then it was basically about grinding the game and getting to know more about the deck list, more about the specific matchups. And game is really fun, in my opinion, even though, you know, all of the arguments about RNG and whatnot, I definitely enjoyed the game. I still do. And that's one of the great things about Hearthstone, in my opinion. That's actually fun.
What, you know, I know you're in college now. You were in high school when you were coaching me. Gosh, this is so crazy, right?
Yeah.
But he was in high school. He was, like, doing exams and then, like, coaching me on the side, you know? Like, you're in high school and you're in college now, so I know you've maybe taken a short break from Hearthstone, but you've recently got back into it because I see you climbing the ladder often. So,
yeah, I just I had a bit of a busy few months, and so since my finals are over now, I started to play a bit more. it was the metagame definitely shifted a lot, and like compared to past, I have a lot more free time and I guess in general freedom, because my mom absolutely hated me playing Hearthstone so much in high school. she wanted me to be more serious with my studies, but this game was really like fun for me, and I definitely spent 3-4 hours every night playing and spending some time. So right now I wanna, you know, maybe play a bit more, not so seriously probably, but I wanna have fun, maybe to climb ladders a bit more seriously.
So you know, now that you've been playing a little, you know, you're introduced to all these new cards, what type of archetypes stand out to you as pretty powerful, or like what are some decks that you're like, wow, this is something new and unique to the game that I haven't seen in the past couple years?
I think the new Hunter package with the Zul'jin and whatnot seems really powerful to me. It has a really good early game, a decent early game with, I guess, even have the super late game. It even has that with the 4 mana +3/+3 card. I can't remember its name though. So this archetype has the like ability to beat control warriors even as a even in the value game, and definitely has the upper edge on the mage matchup in my opinion with the deadly shot and having the ability to have an early pressure. So I really like the archetype as a whole.
Yeah, and man, you know, honestly, it's so wild. You know what? It was funny because the other day I was spectating one of your matches and you were playing Conjurer's Mage, right? Or like a version of Conjurer's Mage.
Then
you were up against that spell hunter, and then, you know, he just happened to have the craziest Zul'jin turn. That was ridiculous. You know, you got the twin spell card, the one that makes the 5/5 rush guy, and I'm just like, man, what? This is madness. He cleared out that conjurer's board so wild, or like so easily, which was pretty nuts. I can definitely see how that could be one of Mage's rougher matchups. What is one of your proudest accomplishments or moments in Hearthstone, whether it be a ladder finish or, you know, developing a certain type of archetype or coaching somebody, whatever it may be? What was your proudest moment, I think?
Proudest moment? I more than ladder, what I enjoy is playing in the Open Cups. Mm. And winning my first Open Cup was, I think, my proudest moment. It was a Zotac Cup, if I remember correctly, with around like 100 people.
Mm-hmm. How many hours was that?
I can't remember. Like, I started in the morning, ended right before lunch, so that's what I remember. So it was probably 4 to 5 hours.
Wow.
And I was playing this mage list that I created on my own. It was after CVG, I think, with the Echo of Medivh, the 4-mana card that gives you a copy of the minions. Mm-hmm. I played Molten Giants and whatnot. I had this perfect list, and winning the tournament with my own original list that no one else was playing, that was, I think, my proudest moment.
That's awesome, man. Have you haven't entered any of the recent cups now that Specialist format is out and the changes to competitor Hearthstone? Yeah, well, I mean, I assume that you don't have 13 hours of your day to spare to play one cup. You know, that's pretty much what the experience
right
is. Yeah, you're looking like 12 rounds of Hearthstone. And, you know, waiting around for an hour or whatever to play your next round. And only the winner goes. You know what I mean? You have to win the cup. Like, you have to go 11-0 or whatever it is, 12-1, whatever, to advance. It's ridiculous.
It sounds like an awful format for the players. Like, if losing in the first round should be as painful, if not more painful, than losing in the last round. You know, after you spent 10 hours of your day and you just lose in the last game.
Correct. That's that's my thoughts exactly. I was telling Meaty this when he was on a podcast a few weeks back, and we agreed, like, it's just, you know, it's not worth that time commitment, because even if you win, you know, that's not even a guarantee that you make it to the Las Vegas or wherever the next open qualifier is, right? It's so crazy. I do like Specialist though. I think Specialist is interesting as a format. Although I personally haven't played in any of that format yet, so. But what was I going to ask you? You know, now that we're talking about the Grandmaster thing in general, were there any players that you, I don't know, idolize or look up to that you were surprised didn't make it into the Grandmasters?
One of the players that I like watching the most is Asmodai. He is a streamer from Norway, not Sweden. He's a streamer from Norway. Mm-hmm. And I think he's one of the best players that does not compete in the tournaments. He's just like, he definitely has the ability to, but he just refuses to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Since like he says that it takes up a lot of time and effort and it's just not worth it in his opinion. And I would have definitely loved to see him there. He plays at a really high level of Hearthstone, and it's, as a streamer, he's also quite fun to watch him.
Yeah, he's pretty creative.
I would
have
loved to watch.
He has a long hair, right? He's got like long, kind of brownish blonde hair.
He always wears a cap.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. Like I've seen him finish like rank one many times. He's good. He's super good. I'm actually surprised he doesn't have a, he wasn't invited either.
He used to compete, I think, like a year or two ago. He played in a couple of tournaments.
Yeah.
And then he just stopped, I guess, gradually just played less and less and doesn't play at all right now in tournament play.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, his following on Twitch, is a better return on investment than, you know, putting in time
definitely.
Into a tournament. Like, you know, it's just, he already makes good content. You know, he is a very fun guy to watch, so. And he's very good, a very strong player. What are three basic principles that players looking to improve should focus on in Hearthstone? Like, what are some three core concepts that any good Hearthstone player should know?
I think the best advice I can give to someone who wants to get top legend as a finish, it should be to play, you know, without any worries. Don't have like other things in your mind, because if you make one mistake that costs you a game every single time you sit to play, like a day you make one mistake that costs you the game just because you're tired or whatever, you have something mm-hmm. on your mind, over the month it adds up to 30 games. And I think it's the difference between like having a top 2000 finish and a top 200 finish, you know.
Yeah.
If you just focus a bit more every single game, like if you don't make that one mistake that you just see right after you drop, you know, you miss lethal by one damage, or it's just your combo doesn't work because it's, you know, one man off or whatever that mistake may be. I think it adds up really quickly in the long run.
That's true. That's true.
One of the other things is like playing a deck list that you're actually familiar with the matchups. I think one of the best examples of this in the Hearthstone history is the Freeze Mage versus Patron Warrior matchup. If you go for the damage plan, if you like want to kill your opponent as quickly as possible with four things, you more often than not lost the game. But if you went for the armor plan, you know, play your whirlwind effects with the armor smiths and go up to 30-40 armor and don't draw as much as, you know, possible, so that would give you like over 80% win rates. Knowing your matchups is really important.
Do you have any other tip or concept that people should know?
One of the other things is that like don't switch up deck lists so much. I think this is pretty common advice from everybody, because like if you, as I've said, don't know your matchups as well. If you just like let's play mage today a bit, tomorrow you know, bit of control warriors, a bit of token druid. I mean, since you don't know the deck list so well, what to tech versus certain meta, when you oppose certain meta picks a lot more often than not, the others. So if you don't know these ins and outs of your deck, then your win rate will drop significantly. So having a deck that you like, a good deck that you like, is a very important thing in climbing, in my opinion.
So on that note, do you recommend like one deck only, or would you play two like different type of archetypes, like an aggressive deck and then maybe like a combo deck or like a control deck if you're queuing into consistent anti-aggro matchups, or just one deck and just flat out try to learn that deck as best you can, even its bad matchups?
I guess like having more options is always a good thing, right? If you know how to play them at least a basic level, you know how I play, like who's the beatdown sort of level. If you know like what to do in general, having a counter matchup for other archetypes is always a good thing. But if you're pretty new to the game, having a, you know, a bit of an easier deck to master is always always one of the things that you should do in any game, I guess. Like having the basics down with a easy deck, easier deck that you know by heart, is always the good approach to climbing.
So I know that you've brought a special deck list for us, and I know it's special because I definitely don't see anybody playing this archetype right now. But before we get into that deck in particular, I wanted to know your thoughts on deck building in general. Like, how do you go about with the deck building process? Do you decide on a meta that you want to focus and exploit, or do you just decide on a card or a concept that you really like and try to tweak it? What do you do? How do you start off with building a deck from scratch?
One of the biggest struggles that I had when I started playing Hearthstone was that I didn't have many cards. Since I was in high school, didn't have the money to, you know, buy packs, or I didn't have a full collection. So I had to, you know, do with what I had in my hand. And this, I think, taught me a lot about deck building in general. You know, what you with whatever you have in your hand, you try to make a decent deck and try to climb with that. And you don't have all the meta options. So right now, when new cards hit, you can see the, I can see the synergies a bit better, I guess. So what I do when I start building a deck is, first I look at the meta in general. You know, is it an aggro meta or is it a control meta? Like right now, it's just control decks are much more powerful than you know, the fast aggro decks. Yeah. So the second thing I think is, how do I beat it in general? Is it like everything has a decent counter? So when you have a general plan in mind, then you can approach that thing. Or if it's in tournament play, what type of deck I'm trying to target, and then play and then build the deck around that. Or some of the times you just absolutely love an archetype and you just want to follow that and make it as powerful as possible. Then that's something I also do as well, which is what my today's deck is about.
Okay, so like moving into today's deck, you've brought Handlock. And you sent a couple of lists here, but this is something that you think is very viable for both the ladder and for like tournament play, for specialist play?
I mean, specialist, I don't think so, because this deck has very significant weaknesses, especially versus a bit more aggro matchups, and since this deck isn't deck, the basic principle behind it is play giants and drakes, and the major archetype does this, and it's very popular. Many people try to tech versus the mage, so you kind of, you know,
fall to the
get
same
targeted.
Kind of,
it's not the most powerful because mage is more powerful. It's mage is so popular. I think it would have been more viable if mage wasn't played as much. So like, warriors don't play BGH, and people don't generally tech against giants. So I don't think it's very viable in the competitive play. I mean, I guess in the Conquest format, it would be a lot better to target control warrior with this and mage and hunter, the Zul'jin hunter, because I think the hunter list absolutely crushes control warrior or boom warrior for that matter. Like it's better, at least has like 70% win rate, and this deck would be better in that, but since we don't play that format anymore, I don't think it's very viable in the tournament play.
Okay. So for those of you at home, if you're watching this video on YouTube or if you're listening to the podcast and you just want to grab the deck code, that deck code will be in the description. But for those of you who aren't going to grab the deck code, I'm just going to read off the standard list. There's a couple lists here. The standard list has 2 Immortal Coils, 1 Acidic Swamp Ooze, 2 Doomsayers, 1 Plot Twist, 2 Sunfury Protectors, 1 Earthen Ring Farseer, 2 Shadow Bolts, 2 Hellfires, 1 Shadow Flame, 1 Spellbreaker, 2 Twilight Drakes, 2 Rotten Apple Bombs, 1 Ziliax, 2 Aranasi Broodmother, 2 Siphon Souls, 1 Lord Godfrey, 2 Twisting Nethers, 1 Lord Jiraxxus, and 2 Mountain Giants. And, you know, looking at this, just right off the bat, there are like 3 huge things that stick out to me, which I really, really love already. Like, number one, it's Handlock, right? You got the Mountain Giant synergy, and you have Twilight Drakes, but then you also have Lord Jiraxxus, which is legendary warlock card that, you know, I really haven't seen a lot of Lord Jiraxxus in a long, long time, ever since Gul'dan has kind of come out, yeah. Right? So it's really nice to see that. And I love the amount of healing in the deck, like the double apple bomb, the Ziliax, the Brood Mother. I mean, that is what I'm talking about, man. I like it. Can you tell us a little bit about what you want to target with this deck and what you don't want to see?
So this deck had when I first started building this deck, I thought I really enjoy playing the Giant's Mage list, but Giant's Mage list has absolutely no removal for the early game decks. So when you face a hunter, it usually destroys you because by you reach turn time. By the time you reach turn 4, you're usually dead. So what I wanted to do was build a deck list with more board removal and more healing, that so I would be better versus the early game archetypes. But this deck, I think, has the advantage of having a better win percentage than mage versus aggro decks, mm-hmm. which I think versus shaman, it's really favored. Shaman very rarely wins versus this deck.
How about versus a control warrior? I know you were saying that mage or control warrior kind of target. Well, no, doesn't mage beat control warrior?
It does, definitely does. It does very decisively, I would say. The warrior has very few chances to actually come back if they don't have that early game, 2-3-4 combo with the getting you down to 10 health and bombing you down. Usually, that's the only way they win, from what I've seen. This deck also beats warrior, especially if you tech in a bit more warrior specific cards. If you see a lot of that, which is one of the I use. I don't like Watson Apple Bombs versus warrior. The Faceless Manipulators are much better in that matchup, so I tend to play that way in the warrior matchup.
What do you copy with the manipulators, the Faceless Manipulators, in that matchup?
I mean, it's always a good idea to get a giant on 4 and then Faceless on 5, which is usually unbeatable versus warrior. They don't have that fast of an answer to that if they don't get the shield slams. That's a win condition on its own. And other than that, usually Jiraxxus wins the game on itself versus warrior. So when you get a bit low, it's always a good idea to Faceless your opponent's Ziliax minion, whatever he enlarges magnetics into with the Ziliax. If you copy that, you get a lot of heal. And Jiraxxus's 6/6 are usually unbeatable versus warrior, if you have that.
I noticed that there's a augmented Elec in that control warrior focus list. Is that just for the Elysiana, or what do you use the Elec with?
Oh, it's Elec's. Elec is usually comboed with Plot Twist. When you shuffle your hand into your deck, it shuffles another one, so you get a thicker deck list. Deck. So it's great versus warrior for cheap price.
So that, and, okay. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but Plot Twist is a card that I love because, you know, it just reminds me a lot of Magic the Gathering and Brainstorm or typical hand manipulation effects, right? But this is such a difficult card to use. So, can you give maybe the listeners at home some advice on when or where, what situations to look around when you decide to play a Plot Twist?
So, Plot Twist's main usage is, I think, not for the Elec combo to get a bigger deck list, but it also has the ability to refresh your hand where you don't get your giants or drakes on maybe turn five or six. It definitely helps with that, to get a fresh hand with more threats, especially versus mage. It's quite powerful in the mage matchup because once you run out of threats, they just play something and another, and at some point your removals are over and they just swamp the board and win. So this is quite effective versus mage to refresh your hand. It also helps with healing with Arnasi Broodmother. When you get when you draw them, you just don't want to play them for 6 mana. And when you refresh and get them once more, draw them once more, it's just 4 more heal. If you're in a desperate situation, it also helps with that. And I guess in general, versus aggro, for 2 mana, finding after you run out of removals in your hand, just getting a fresh set of removals usually means that you win the matchup, because they just don't have that much
fuel,
juice in the deck.
I see. What are some typical flex choices here? Like, what do you think are the 30th and the 29th card in the deck? Is it the Rotten Apple Bombs? Are those the first cards to cut,
definitely,
I guess?
Definitely. I just definitely like dislike them, because when you play them into the board, nothing happens. You know, you don't know how, if you will have the Death Rattle effect. They just might silence it and go past it. They are just, in general, weak cards, but I don't know what to fill their places in, because in the last rotation, Warlock lost a lot. Like, we lost Defile, we lost the 4-mana card with the healing, lifesteal, 3-5-7 damage, just can't remember its name.
Oh, yeah,
we
lost, Spellstone.
Amethyst Spellstone. We lost Gul'dan a lot, like, it was lost. So, this deck needs something to heal and, you know, past the turns 5-6, so the Rotten Apple Bombs was the only choice that I thought of, but it's definitely not a good card in my opinion. Like, if in the next expansion, I definitely want to cut these out and replace them with something that will hopefully help this archetype.
Man, I really like Aranasi Broodmother. Like, I think that card is underrated. Like, maybe it doesn't have enough support yet in the Warlock class, but I think that card is on the verge of just being extremely good. Like, I, you know, the heal for four is always relevant, and with, like, you know, like you said, plot twist and, you know, hopefully other mechanics in the future, I think it's going to be a great card, actually. I don't know.
Definitely. It's going to be viable, if not one of the good cards of Warlock. Mainly because, like, you don't have to pay the mana for the healing.
Yeah. Strong.
That's quite great, in my opinion, as this card goes.
What was I gonna ask you about for Jiraxxus? Because I know, you know, Jiraxxus is a old control favorite, but I mean, you know, he's like Michael Jordan, you know what I mean? Like, everyone knows about him, but not many people have seen him played, and you know, he just came out of retirement, he's back in this deck. Like, what are some pointers that you can give new players who probably haven't messed around with Jiraxxus enough? Like, when should you play this aggressively? Like, even if you're at 30 life, what matchup should you decide to just go, like, well, I need my Jiraxxus out now to make my hero power? Or, and what matchup should you be very cautious about playing it and playing it very late?
I think Jiraxxus is mainly in this deck to have the late game juice going with the 6/6s. And versus a warrior, you want to play this card in an early fashion. You know, maybe even like whenever you get 9 mana and it's in your hand, you play it. If the board is allowing you to, unless your deck is like filled with 10 bombs or whatever, you want to play this in a warrior matchup fast, mainly because this card is like making you have the threats every single turn. Because at some point, warrior, if you don't play Jiraxxus in this deck list, warrior will win versus you, because you don't have the enough threats to actually kill him if they respond to your early giants. Other than that, I think this is quite good versus, you know, aggro decks, because it has the ability to heal to 15. And my deck has a lot of healing for the early game, I guess. And since we always, like, hit, he hits, I heal, and clear a bit of the board. When I get to, like, really low HP and I play Lord Jiraxxus, it happens to be that they also run out of things to hit me with. So Jiraxxus is right now a good meta call to, like, get yourself the 15 HP, or Alexstrasza for that matter. They are both really good to, like, heal versus aggro. That's what I've seen so far playing this deck.
What are some general mulligan strategies, like, you know, without getting too matchup specific, I guess, like, what are you looking to keep in general, I guess, like, versus slow decks or versus aggressive decks? What should you look to always keep in your hand?
I think versus slow decks, it's like pretty clear to see. You know, you need to have the giants to play them early on. You need to have the drakes, and if you're playing faceless manipulator in the deck, that could be a keep if you also have one of the four mana drakes or the giants. Also, trying to get the Jiraxxus in the warrior matchup can be something that you might consider. I haven't done it so far, but I think it's one of the things that if you play the Jiraxxus early on without dying, you know, in turn 9, 10, then the threats every single turn coming out is very significant to beat the control warrior matchup.
How about versus aggressive?
Aggro, you want Hellfires. You definitely want Hellfires. You want Doomsayers. I mean, of course, one of them, Hellfires. And versus Shaman, I tend to keep Lord Godfrey in my hand, because when they play the card with the one-man Wurmlocks, if you play Lord Godfrey, it absolutely clears the board. And usually that's when this deck, or in general, control decks loses versus Shaman, when they play that card that has a death rattle of one Murloc, and then play Bloodlust the following turn. And when you're like 15, 16 HP usually versus Shaman at that point, they just completely kill you, which is a shame in my opinion. Like, we're playing so good and they just play this card we cannot deal with immediately, and you just die.
Yeah,
quite frustrating. So this is something I like to keep versus Shaman.
Okay, I see. What are there any types of decisions with this deck that are maybe not very intuitive for a player who's new to the archetype? Like, what type of decisions are very important decisions to make, but typically difficult to see if you've never piloted a deck before?
I think this deck is fairly straightforward to play in the control matchups. If you're like, if you play the bits of Unlock, after you play a bit of Unlock, it's quite easy to play. But if I'm new playing versus aggro, it's a bit difficult to, knowing when you have to play your removals, or if you can greed out one more turn. Sometimes like, oh my god, I'm gonna get, he's gonna absolutely kill me. I have to play all these removal to make him go away right now. Getting scared versus those type of matchups is usually the biggest mistake I've seen. Mm. You have to greed up because you only have so many, you know, like you have to help in your hand. You typically have one or two removal at any time when you play them out, you know, 1-2, and when the third board comes, which usually does, you lose the game. So like tapping a bit more, and usually saving your removals is one of the key things to play with, do versus aggro.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to add about the deck list in particular? Maybe other tech choices that people could think about if they are facing a certain type of meta?
I want to say, like, after the buffs hits, I think the Paladin aggro archetype will be one of the strong forces, because it will beat Hunter probably what I predict is correct. It will beat Hunter, it will beat Mage. So Paladins will get more and more, and I think this deck does a really good job versus the Paladin matchup. So after the buffs hit, I think this is a deck to play to beat Paladin if they are like completely swamping the ladder, because you don't auto lose any matchup with this deck. It's always a competitive game, even versus aggro, which is one of the deck's weaker matchups, like versus Hunter, versus Mech Hunter especially. This deck kind of gets crushed. I don't think I have like over 30% of a win rate, because they just have these amazing threats early on, and then with the poisonous and the 3-mana 2-2 guy, you just get destroyed at some point. Mm-hmm. Your giants don't stick, and they have consistent damage with the hero power, so it's a bit of a hard matchup. I think like when the Paladins get stronger, this deck will also become stronger. At least like when the what was the 6/6 epic with the secrets guy, when that was super popular.
6/6 epic.
Yeah, 6/6 epic card from Paladin that brings secrets.
Oh,
from
mysterious challenger. Yeah.
Yeah. The one that card was completely destroying everybody. I think Handlock was a great choice to play. Handlock was really powerful. And when Paladins become better, I think Handlock also becomes better, because it usually absolutely crushes Paladins with Hellfires, Shadow Flames, and many of the killing choices. I think we do beat Paladin. So I think this is a deck that can be much more popular after the nerfs. Not popular, but better, I guess. I don't think people will actually play this, because we just don't have enough support right now to actually win games and have in general favorable matchups. We just like this deck is good but not great, and not great decks don't usually be isn't usually played in Hearthstone.
I see. One last question about the deck. Let's say you have Twilight Drake and Mountain Giant in the hand on turn four. Which one do you play in, and why? And like, what type of situations is there really a difference in deciding which one to play?
I guess versus Warrior, you want to play the Drakes first because they usually have at least one removal, but they might not have two removal, and having the Giant is always better.
Okay.
Versus, I think, like Shaman, or if you really suspect that your opponent will have a Silence, you might want to play the Giant, considering that is important in my opinion. And also versus Priest, Drakes are quite good, like, at least historically always has been, because they don't have the 4 mana removal. Playing Drakes and maybe facelessing it can be powerful versus Priests, but you know, this is, they are not, Priest is not being played right now a lot, yeah. And could be not so important, but yeah, considering silences, and if your opponent has removal, these are the two tips I could give.
Man, I'm so excited to play this deck. I really like I said, I really like Plot Twist. I think it's a cool card that maybe is a little difficult to pilot, but I think with this build, it's so straightforward, right? You want to just drop your 4, 5, 6 mana threats and then, you know, spend the rest of the turns finding the removal to keep the board clear or, you know, mitigate whatever incoming damage is. So I'm super excited to mess around with this. What is your favorite archetype in Hearthstone ever?
Except for that mage I mentioned that was, you know, about Echo of Medivh, I absolutely love that deck. You know, it had the basic idea of having Molten Giants in your hand, anti-kill bots, and Echo of Medivh.
Yeah.
And playing, after you get low, you just do this, Frost Nova the opponent, and play these giants, and win the next turn. I absolutely love that, and absolutely nobody expected that, you know. Everybody thought I was playing a Freeze Mage because I wasn't playing so many things. You know, I had secrets, card draws. I love that deck list, but since it was a bit of a short-term list, right after that, Echo of Medivh went away, after a few months. My favorite deck list, I would say, is Midrange Shaman.
Midrange Shaman.
Yes, it's also like long gone from the metagame. Sometimes I like look back and cry over it, but I loved like the story. I'm forgetting card names.
Which one?
Flame Tongue.
Oh, yeah.
Flame Tongue Totem. And in general, like playing these board-centric decks, which, you know, is about trading. Alakir is also a card I absolutely love. When this deck was viable, especially like around Naxxramas time, you know, GVG, this deck was one of the best decks to play. It actually had like good matchups, and every pro was bringing it to the tournaments. You know, the World Championship, I think many people had some type of a Lexus that reminded Midrange Shaman, which is, I think, like the only weakness it had was it had no real healing effects. Other than that, I love this deck.
That had Zap-O-Matic too?
I think that wasn't a card back then.
Was it not?
But Zap-O-Matic.
The Wind Fury one? It's like 3-2 Wind Fury. It's a mech.
Oh, right. It was after GVG. This was like this was before GVG, if I recall correctly. Like when the Undertakers, you play Undertakers,
oh,
you play
my gosh,
Nudie Knights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Zombie Chows.
Oh,
yeah. That Dark Times of Hearthstone.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to get that out of my memory, man. You know, I'm trying to like hide it away somewhere, you know, because. Oh gosh, Undertaker! Holy cow! Man, remember when Undertaker was, like how crazy that card was? Jeez. Man, what is your favorite card in Hearthstone? Like in all the years of Hearthstone, what is your favorite card?
Oh, I never thought of this. Let me think. I like Savannah High Main. I absolutely.
You like to play double
play
legends,
the
right?
Warrior? Yeah, absolutely. My favorite thing in Hearthstone. Playing coin Savannah on 5 and another Savannah on 6. Which is, I think, one of the things that you can do right now versus like these decks that are. When you're playing the Zul'jin Hunter, you can play one Savannah High Main and then play the four mana card to like put 3 more in your deck. I think it definitely is really good versus Warrior, because Warriors right now may win, that may like make you run out of threats right now, and then fatigue you with the Elysiana.
Yeah.
Man, so I think this is something that you might take in just as a one-off in your Hunter deck. That was what I thought today.
Cool.
This could be a good addition as well, yeah.
Have you tried any of the solo adventure that just came out?
Honestly, I haven't had the time. I really want to do it though. I love Hearthstone's adventure parts. It's like having this one single player content is good, but since I haven't been playing a lot lately, I just didn't have the time. I wanted to play more constructive.
Man, when you get the chance, you definitely have to try it out. Like, you know, to be fair, I really like the solo content. Like, I like the ladder. It's fun, too. I like to play. But the solo content's cool because it's, like, new cards and new different treasures and different, like, you know, archetypes that you can build. And this one is really, really in-depth. Like, there are, like, so many legs of it. And, you know, each class... You can beat these legs with each class. So, you know, you got 9 different variables for every match. And then you also have decks within each of those 9 classes. So each class has 3 decks, and then they have a 4th random deck. And then, of course, you build on each of those decks as you play the solo adventure. It's pretty awesome. It's really, really crazy. It's pretty fun, you know, and it always saves your progress. So it's something that you can just pick up and mess around for 5 minutes, like while you're in between things. And if you're headed out to do something else, you can just come back, pick it up at a later date. It's pretty cool though. Definitely should check it out.
Yeah, I'll do it. I think the last one I played was Karazhan with the tower thing. I love that. I think the storyline was great too. Yeah. And I'll definitely have to check out the other ones.
You got to. I'm really impressed with like the most recent adventures. Like this adventure is a kind of a mix of the last two adventures kind of together. And I think it makes for a super fun solo experience. I'm actually really surprised. It's quite a big amount of content behind a $20 investment or whatever it is for the adventure. Nick, on that point, anything else you want to let the listeners at home know? Like maybe how they can contact you or follow you on any social media if you're open to giving any of that out? Or anything you want to just tell people at home about Hearthstone?
I guess like one of the things that I realized this week, like when coming back to the game, I was watching the Grandmasters this week. New Zealand girl, she was playing, and chat was absolutely so sexist and toxic that like if that can't be a part of Hearthstone. This can't be what our community is about. And I felt so disgusted by that. And like, I don't know. I just wanted to say that. And
you know, it's just. I'm glad you brought it up, you know, because, you know, honestly, like the Grandmaster thing in general, it already has so much negative connotation around it just because of the way they picked the 48 people for it and how it's kind of retroactively, you know, applied. And, you know, those people who didn't make it, they really had no, like, you know, no one knows how to get into the 48 until after the fact. And I think that puts every person who made the 48 under a really critical microscope, you know. And unfortunately for Pathra, right, that's her name, Pathra, she's so beautiful, yeah. By the way, you know, she's so pretty, but and she's a good Hearthstone player, dude. She's good. And then, you know, I just feel like it's disappointing that people in chat would have to stoop so low as to, you know, use the outcomes of the matches as confirmation bias to her not belonging. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, see this girl, she's not good. Like, why did we pick her? Like, you know, she didn't deserve this spot. But, you know, those were hard games to be in. Like, and you know, hey, Hearthstone, there's one thing you can guarantee in any game of Hearthstone, and that's somebody's gonna lose, you know? And like this, it doesn't matter how good you are, you know, or whatnot, like, you know, someone will lose. And, you know, unfortunately it was her in those games, but I mean, man, you're definitely right. The community has to be better. But that's, you know, that's a chat moderation kind of thing too, because, you know, that happens in a lot of games, right? And it's just, you know, Hearthstone, I really feel like the direction of Hearthstone as an esport you know, who knows where it's going to go? Like, this might even be the last year of any kind of competitive Hearthstone. We don't know. You know, I think the Grandmasters format is horrible. I think the way they picked it was horrible. I think the focus is bad, like just trying to put it on these 48 players. It does a disservice for all the other great players out there. Asmodai, many other people who didn't make it, like who definitely deserve that kind of exposure or the opportunity to get into it. And they shouldn't have to devote 16 hours on a weekend to try to qualify for an open cut, to try to make it into there, to fight for one of two spots at the end of the year. No way. I think that's ridiculous. And, you know, I don't know. I love Hearthstone, though, and I love the community. And even if it didn't really have that competitive esports edge, I would still play the game because it's super fun, you know?
Yeah, the game is, like, as I said, the main point is about having fun in this game.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I really enjoy Hearthstone. And, you know, I hope. And I have a lot of money invested in Hearthstone, man. Like, I have all the cards. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm already thinking, like, right now, like, man, I want all the fun decks. I want them all gold, you know? But, like, yeah. You know, I hate to see the day when it's just like, hey, guys, you know what? We've been talking about it over here at Blizzard and Activision, and we decided, you know, we're done with this kids game. We're done with Hearthstone. We're going to work on, you know, something else, right? So,
yeah,
you know, crossing my fingers.
But I do understand them from a business perspective. I think this Grandmaster format has a merit, because when I was watching, like, last year's World Championship, even though I am playing at the high legend level and I see all these players, I mean, when I watch some of the older players that I know their faces of, you know, more the popular streamers, maybe I have this emotional connection with them. And when this when the Hearthstone Championship has all these, like, from 48 players, if 30 of them I have absolutely no idea about who they are, I would not be so invested in watching and maybe, like, getting into the game. So I understand them that, you know, the best, more popular players getting the Grandmaster status in a way where, you know, more Weavers will come. I understand them, but this is not, like, competitive. I don't know. It's not competitive in a way. No, it's just, you know, drawing Weavers. Yeah.
I feel you. Definitely. Nick, my man, thank you for doing the podcast with me. I really appreciate it, man. I hope to see you more on the ladder. Any last...
thank you.
Anything else you want to say, man?
Let me give my Discord link, maybe, because I don't usually use other social medias. Maybe you can put it in the description. It's sure. Nick Tiret, hashtag 2545.
Got it. I'll add it to the YouTube and the podcast.
Okay. So info. If anybody tries out the handlock list, feel free to contact me. And maybe have some, if people want to practice versus this deck, we can do that as well. I love this deck list and lots of opportunity to play test versus other players.
I'm gonna mess with it, man. I'm gonna spend my next week of, like, standard play just playing this deck, you know. That's what, like, it's so funny now, because, you know, my deck list that I have on my you know, when I open up the Hearthstone client, all the deck lists are just the deck lists that people on the podcast have recommended to play, and those are the only lists I play right now, right? And you know, some of them, like, have kind of fallen out of favor. Like, someone gave me a Tempo Rogue list that you know, obviously with the nerfs just isn't as strong as anymore, but you know, it's still fun to see, and it's still cool to see. Like, you know, you brought this Handlock, this other guy's name's So Legit, he brought a Freeze Mage, and those are both decks that you never see, right? So whenever people see me playing mage, they're like, oh, it's this fucking conjuring mage, but, you know, then they get hit by Alexstrasza into, you know,
I have
whatever
to check that out. I love Freeze Mage.
Oh, definitely. That one is a fun list too. And then he had a bunch of good tech choices to fix things, because at the time, the list that he gave, that was, like, solely targeting rogue. But in the podcast, he made mention to, like, ways to change the list if he wanted to focus against Hunter or against Conjuring Mage. So, yeah, definitely cool, man. But, Nick, thank you for for jumping onto the stream and the podcast. And those of you at home, remember,
so
you can follow Nick on his Discord. Try out this Handlock. Listen to the description. Let us know what you think. And, you know, comment and let me know who you want to see next on the podcast. This season, we still have 4 or 5 more episodes lined up. We actually got a couple more guests. We have Kriya and Asmodeus. Kriya is a very popular rogue player. And Asmodeus is one of my favorite priest players, actually. He's a combo priest player. And for those of you who like combo decks, he would be a great great one to listen to in the future, so stay tuned to those in the coming weeks. Anyway, we will see you guys next time. Thank you for listening.